Friday afternoon's employees recorded in a server closet at the Austin Convention Center in Austin, Texas.
Oh man, what a night. That was fun last night.
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah, as best I recall and from what video evidence I've seen.
That's true. Yeah, honestly, it was a ton of fun. Like, it was great to meet all those folks out there.
Yeah, that was super cool. So we told the people that we were coming to ViewConf in Austin. We're here. We're recording live from the conference venue in a room that we totally legitimately procured for our uses here at the convention center. So we're here for ViewConf, and we've got a guest with us. We've got Oscar. What's your last name?
Yeah. Oscar Spencer.
Oh, thanks. That's my name, yeah. So we met up with Oscar last night. We had tacos. We went bowling at a three-story bar. It was. I felt like I got a really authentic Austin experience doing that last night.
I know why all the kids are showing up.
That's right. That's fun. Mm-hmm. The bars have bowling lanes in them and ping pong tables and skee ball.
It was skee ball?
I missed that. Oh, I'm sorry. No, the shuffleboard.
Yeah,
shuffleboard. Yeah. That's what I meant.
Yeah, no, I completely missed out on the second floor of that bar where all the games were.
There's a third floor, too. There's a
rooftop bar, I was on the rooftop. Oh, okay.
Yeah, the second floor was kind of tucked in there. Yeah. I'd passed it a couple of times.
Thinking it was the bathroom.
Yeah. Rolf just gave a lightning talk, but he's also who led the testing workshop that Alan and Austin went to on Monday.
Yeah,
we got to bowl with him and talk shop for a while, and that was great to kind of hang out with him for a bit.
And Rolf was a good bowler.
He was.
Especially like relative to his company.
Yeah,
I feel like Austin's a good bowler, but you were trying to pull a move.
I saw some guys spinning, and I had to spin, and I just kept throwing gutter balls.
You got one strike, though, didn't you?
You got two strikes.
It was epic.
My first frame, I apparently remember my strike.
Yeah. Your first frame was a strike. That's how you opened the game.
Right, it wasn't a spin, though. I didn't throw a spin on the first one, so it technically doesn't count.
So he threw spins all night, and I achieved spins by the end of the night. We didn't come with a topic, but no, I did think that
that's not uncommon for us.
Yes, but, yeah.
No, that's true.
Oscar, you probably haven't had a chance to listen to our show yet.
Not yet. No.
It's pretty much like the conversations from last night, and maybe or maybe not as much alcohol. Today, not.
Not for you guys.
Yeah, yeah. It's day after conference party. This is still the morning, as far as I'm concerned. Yes. Whatever time of day it is,
it will be morning till tomorrow.
But I thought it's fun always when we get a guest come on the show with us to just talk about stuff you're working on. What you're all about, make any confessions that you have about your love for JavaScript. Mm-hmm. You need to let people know that up front. Mm-hmm. That's the right thing to do. Mm-hmm. Tell us your story. What are you working on, man?
Yeah. Coming out to ViewConf this year, it's been awesome. It's really been a trip. I gave a talk yesterday. It was Vue as a backend framework.
We saw that talk guide, and it was like so provocative. We were so ready to hate watch that talk.
Oh yeah. No, I totally hear it. It was supposed to have a provocative title, and I think it did. I think it worked. I think a lot of folks saw the name of that talk and like, what is this guy on about? Like, why even bother? Right? Like, why even come out here and do that, right? That was really awesome. It was all about Vue 3 reactivity and how, hey, you can really use that to do literally anything. So that was awesome. I had a good time doing that. But yeah, my day job, I work at a company called Tidelift. We do managed open source. We pay open source maintainers for their work. and it's all good, you know. I really can't complain about about work or life right now. Everything's good. As far as my love for JavaScript, I mean, I love JavaScript as much as the next guy, and I hate JavaScript as much as the next guy. Mm. So I think we can mostly leave it there.
That was bait because you are working on a programming language.
That's true. I am working
on it. So you can't love JavaScript that much.
I was reading up on the docs of it.
Oh, really?
The intro. And you do need us for contributors for docs. So
oh, yeah.
I'd be glad to help with
that. Oh, yeah. No, absolutely. Yeah. So, yeah, no, the language is called Grain. And it started as a project between me and one of my friends, maybe I think 2 years ago now. And time really flies. Yeah. Mm. So we made the language because it was right around the time that WebAssembly had just become on by default in all the major browsers, right? And so, like, this was a big deal. But I didn't see any new languages that people were making for WebAssembly. Like, right. We had a C compiler for WebAssembly. Right. And, like, all right, cool, yeah, that's just what I want to do. I wanted to run some C in my browser today. Right? You know? Yeah. And so, like, that's, you know, all fine and dandy. But, you know, I wanted to see something kind of new, right? So that's what we kind of started to do. And, you know, there's all these amazing features from, like, academic and functional programming languages, right? But none of them are in the mainstream languages. And so I said, hey, if we could set out to make a language that incorporated all these things but was actually user-friendly, didn't suck, right? Yeah, you know, then we could really be onto something. And that was kind of cool. So we started on the project, never really showed it off very much. I had a really dumb website out there. And I wrote a blog post for my company, casually mentioned Grain, right? And someone read my blog post. Turns out they were, you know, reasonably known on Twitter, and they tweeted about the language. And all of a sudden, it got posted on Reddit. On Reddit, our programming got posted on Hacker News. The funniest bit, though, is it got posted on Reddit, our programming Circle Jerk.
And,
granted, we were not ready to show this to the world. So we were unprepared, and so we had an example in the docs, and we had an is odd function. They were mutually recursive. Like, you check is odd by checking, oh, subtract one is it even, and vice versa, right? And so they were just like, you know, they looked at the code, they noticed that we didn't handle negative numbers at all. And so one guy just comments, test pass one of one. And I lost my mind on that. It was the funniest thing. Yeah, but, you know, we've been working on it now, you know, really making some progress. We just launched a new website. We got the guide up, you know, obviously looking for contributors. And it's not just folks who, you know, like, even if you've never worked on a compiler before, like, there's plenty of stuff to be done. Tons of standard library to be written, obviously tons of docs that we got to write too. So yeah, just looking for folks to get involved. So if you want to be a part of the next hot thing, then definitely check out grainlang.org, grain-lang.org.
That's awesome.
Check us out.
We'll put it in the show notes.
Oh, well, that'd be awesome, yeah.
I saw when I was reading on there, you referenced the tendency towards functional programming with TypeScript, mm-hmm. and you mentioned Elm. I have a on again, off again, love for Elm, though I've yet to be able to implement it anywhere in production. I went to ElmConf last year. But yeah, so is that, me personally, I tend towards that, like, functional side just to kind of give guide ropes to things that can get out of hair, get out of control on the front end pretty easily. Was that part of what you wanted to do, like, when you were coming up with stuff for Grain and why you kind of went that direction? Does it compare a lot with things like Elm?
Absolutely. We realized that this day and age, folks really do, you know, like, functional's new again, right?
Yeah.
Like, you're looking at React, right? And it's funny because, you know, obviously I'm a Vue guy. I love Vue. I think Vue is, like, super easy. But a lot of folks still love React. They love the whole thinking in React. It's functional, right? You got to think a certain way. But the fact of the matter is, you end up writing apps that are pretty good, and pretty easy to reason about. Like, we got ReasonML now, which is super cool language, where they're doing all that same stuff. They got Reason React, and it's, like, the pure functional version of React, and, you know, people are loving it, right? And then, yeah, there's languages like Elm that people are loving. So some people really love Elm, some folks don't
that hate on Elm as well.
So. Right, yeah. And so, you know, Elm is obviously made to, like, hey, this is for you to build apps, right? Yeah. And we wanted Grain to be more of a general purpose language. So we wanted to have, you know, all those abilities that you get from those functional languages. And so, like, having things like an amazing type checker that's going to tell you, like, hey, like, not only were you implementing this, but you missed an edge case. And not only did you miss an edge case, here's an example of the exact edge case that you missed, right? And that's such a powerful feature when you're writing a program. Because what happens, right? We're writing a program, and we forget about those small little things like that. So if we can handle things, if the language can tell you, hey, this is what you need to do, you're going to actually do it, and you're going to write better code, right? I think the best example of this, I think Facebook, they rewrote Messenger.com from, I think it was in React originally, but they they swapped it to Reason ML with Reason React is what it's called, I think. And they went from, I think, 10 bug reports a day to 10 bug reports a year. And that's just from having that amazing type checker that they have in Reason. And, you know, Reason's awesome. I love Reason. But there's just, you know, some things that I want to do a little bit differently than that language. And, you know, Grains compiling to WebAssembly is the main thing versus Reason, obviously, compiling back to JavaScript.
So what are you I might sound ignorant here. what are you actually writing the language in? You're not actually writing it in WebAssembly, are you?
No,
not at all. So are you using the C compiler to WebAssembly? Are you writing it in C?
So our language is written in OCaml, which is an interesting choice, I know. But OCaml honestly is a fantastic language for writing a compiler.
That's about the only thing I've ever heard about OCaml. If you remember the computer science meetup group in Northwest Arkansas, I went to a couple talks there about writing compilers in OCaml.
Yeah, it's really fantastic because it's got all those features that you want. I wouldn't suggest it as maybe a general purpose language. There's a couple companies that that use it that way, but it's really great for writing a compiler, and it gives you that, hey, you missed an edge case. And turns out when you're writing a compiler, that's really helpful when you realize. Because it's cool, because when I want to add a new feature, I literally just go and add that feature to the parser for the compiler. I was like, here's the new syntax, and then I let the compiler errors guide me to implementing the feature. It's like, hey, you need to go in this file because you added a new case and you didn't handle this case, and you just go all the way through and then you're done. And then all of a sudden you're like, hey, look, I'm a compiler author. Like, you didn't, like, you know, you're not necessarily that smart or anything. You just follow the compiler. It's
the tutorial.
Keep going, right?
That's really cool. I was curious about that myself. Just have to let somebody else ask that question first.
Oh, yeah. I'll fall on the sword of my own ignorance.
That's cool. I'm going to look at OCaml for sure. Yeah, I went to, I think, one of those. I remember Chad was telling me about that. We're kind of talking about OCaml, how useful is it, and if you want to write a compiler.
Quite.
Which at the time I did not, but
turns out still don't.
I mean, you might now, right?
I'm still waiting for someone to write. I don't know what you'd call it, right? Because we have Cython for, and then you have PyPy for Python written in Python. What would the Python interpreter for WebAssembly even be called? I'm not sure. But we can call it Java.
WASM is that you?
Yeah, we said WASM for WebAssembly. Yeah, I think so.
POSM.
It's like a POSM.
POSM. I like POSM because it's like a POSM.
POSM. That's it. Done. Someone get possumlang.org right now.
I think someone actually is working on a Python Python and WebAssembly project.
I naively assumed so. That someone out there is doing it.
Yeah.
And better than me because of my laziness and my ignorance. But I would really love to do that.
Was Anvil just transpiling to JavaScript?
I'm not familiar with... What is this Anvil?
Anvil? It was a Python for your backend, Python for your frontend. He gave a talk at...
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yes.
JavaScript.
Yes.
Yeah, it was an all JavaScript frontend.
You could make some horrific frontends with that thing. That was terrible.
It would be a terrible thing to let loose on the world. It was a very interesting project.
Yeah. Right.
Like, and because they had to build a language parser. Because he basically, that was a Python to JavaScript transpiler. Except not really, right? It was, it would compile down to some domain-specific JavaScript. Not like verbatim, you can write code and implement JavaScript through. You can write Python code and get it there. But he had, they had built like a couple of tricky mechanisms. I don't think you could do exhaustive stuff with it. But it had like, write some forms and Ajax and stuff like that. That was really interesting. I totally forgot about that. Mm. Yeah. Not for me.
So are you writing code at Tidelift? Are you?
Yeah, I'm a software engineer at Tidelift. Okay. So like our front end is all Vue, and so I write Vue code all day. You know, when I have to write some back end code, you know, we're a Rails shop, so our back end's all on Rails. And yeah, honestly, like Ruby is actually a pretty good language. Mm-hmm. Like I actually really like Ruby a lot. Rails, a different story, but Ruby, I think, is fantastic.
I think we can all agree.
And yeah, I think I'm drawing a lot of inspiration from Ruby for the grain standard library.
So I was going to ask you about that. Like, what are the languages that you kind of look to for prior art? Like, what's influencing it grain, if you will? You.
Yeah. Oh yeah, no, totally. So I think, you know, languages like Ruby, I think the big takeaways we want to have from languages like Ruby are, hey, developers love writing Ruby code, right? Because it just is so pleasant and nice to write. And the fact of the matter is, anytime you have to do anything at all, you just look in that standard library and it's there. You've got a set and you're like, you know, it would be great if like I just get the combinations of this set. There's a standard library thing for that, right? And that's awesome, right? And there's a standard library for everything. You feel that you can be ridiculously productive in Ruby. The documentation is fantastic, right? And these are things that are great. Now, we also look at Ruby to look at what not to do. And we see like, oh, well, Rails is possible from Ruby, which means maybe we should have
this magic introspection.
Yeah, like maybe let's rein in some of the magic. And
you don't have a method that. Missing function.
We sure don't. we don't have that. No, we don't have that. Right. So I think Ruby's a huge inspiration. I think Python. People also love writing Python for its simplicity. Right.
Fuck yeah, they do.
Yeah, they do. Right. Yeah. Right. And like I think people love the explicit over implicit. Right. You know, everyone loves that. So I think, you know, we draw a lot from that, right? You know, it's just languages that people like using, right? You know, I don't think I haven't really looked at Java very much to like try and make a new language or anything like that. But it's definitely
that can be another like what not to do. Like you can limit, you can put like a character length limit on how long like a class name can be.
Yeah,
not everything has to be an object.
Yeah,
that can be not to like, yeah, Java, right? Like literally everything is.
And I guess it sounds like grain's probably like. It's mostly a functional language, right?
So. Yeah, I mean, it's mostly a functional language. We're trying to, you know, understand that, hey, yeah, like, not everything is perfectly functional. And so we're trying to make sure we're adding all those abilities for people to write code in mostly whatever way they want. But, yeah, in a primarily functional way. And honestly, like, I do love OCaml. I think OCaml is a fantastic language. It's not very useful as a general purpose language. Right. But, you know, if we can take a lot of those nice things from OCaml, in fact, a large part of the type checker in grain is pulled directly from the OCaml source. So we've got their same license because of that too, right? And so if we can do things like that, I think folks are going to love it, right? And like especially as I look at, oh, why don't people use OCaml? It's mostly a documentation issue, like overwhelmingly over everything else.
Right.
And it being maybe a little bit difficult to understand. You look at ReasonML. ReasonML is literally OCaml just with a new front end. It's just different syntax for OCaml and it looks like JavaScript. So that makes people more comfortable. Mm-hmm. So a lot more people like Reason.
What does it compile down to?
So it uses a project for the back end of the compiler called BuckleScript. And so it uses BuckleScript to create JavaScript. So when you write Reason code, it goes through the OCaml compiler, but that spits out JavaScript.
Gotcha.
Yeah. And so that's so people are loving Reason. They think Reason's super cool. I think a lot of why Reason is successful is just the marketing. Like their marketing is pretty good. They've got Facebook behind them to say, hey, yeah, like this is a real language. People should use it. But at the end of the day, it's still OCaml. And so I think there maybe are some limitations there. But all the folks I've met that are working on Reason are all fantastic. They're all super smart people. And, like, I love the work that they're doing over there. And so, yeah, I enjoy inspiration from them, too, and I like how they're doing things. And you guys write Rust?
We play with Rust.
We also have a regular guest on the show.
Yes.
That's it. These two, you and Blake.
Me and Blake.
They're in Rust land.
We like some Rust. Blake is our token JavaScript programmer. We often make him apologize for JavaScript. He unabashedly
That's what happens.
Loves it.
He comes on, he does an episode with us twice a month or so, And then we just pull him in. If we haven't seen him for a week, we're just like, here's all the shit that happened in JavaScript today. I want answers. Why do arrays work like that, Blake? You tell me.
The other day we found out the empty brackets, like an empty object, I think is falsy in JavaScript, which blew my mind.
I had never seen the thing from your talk that you can set the length of an array to zero to delete it.
Yeah, I've seen it, but I never thought of it, because I think it is somewhere. Where in the Vue docs when they talk about reactivity of like you can't just do this, set it to zero and expect that to be reactive without doing like Vue set or
I really did not want to do that, but JavaScript left me no choice.
JavaScript often will do, yeah.
So kind of thinking about that, you had mentioned Python, people really like the explicit over implicit, and like, amen, that is a huge thing for me, I'll talk about myself, but you guys can chime in if you're in this as well. I live in a Python echo chamber, which is wonderful. The echo chamber of PEP 20 or whatever it is, right? This is in a Python, and thinking of, and I'm not saying this to be negative about the talk, Eduardo's talk on VRouter, which was really cool yesterday. Enjoyed every bit of it, but there was one moment in that talk where explicit versus implicit came up for me, and I was just like, no! Call him off! Get him no! Oh. Tell him no! Which is the notion of... Did you see?
Yeah, I got to watch his talk.
So he's talking about, in a future version of VRouter, a way of doing dynamic routing, so adding routes at runtime, right? Mm-hmm. Which... previously, you can add routes dynamically with VRouter, but you can't remove them. Mm-hmm. And that's because the order of the routes are important, and I guess there's not a really good way to figure out how to, when you add and remove them, how to reorder them. And so he's talking about putting together an algorithm that sort of scores the importance of a route, right? Yeah. So that part of it. Which scared me a lot. Like, so the Python guy in me, that was the part where I was like, whoa, 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 whoa. Like, let the order be explicit, and that's the order in which the routes are tested. Or if there's going to be a priority system and things are changing at runtime, right? So you can't necessarily know what the order is at some future state. Rather than calculating, because the calculation was like every node of the URL gives some weight.
Yeah, it gives some weight.
Right. Mm-hmm. And then if one of those nodes is dynamic, it gives a little more weight. And if one of those... is dynamic and is expressed as a regular expression to match it, it gives it a little tiny bump on the end of it, right? But the problem there that I see with something like that is when I write a URL in my route and it doesn't match for whatever reason. I mean, when the browser goes, the router doesn't match to my route. As a Python person, like, you would just never see that in Django or anything else where you go look back at your routes and go, like, well, which order did they run in? Like, you'd have to go test it, right?
Right, yeah.
And so when I thought about that, and this is something that my contribution to this may be beyond bitching about it on a podcast, maybe to suggest that API should be, if a score can be calculated, right, and it's just a numeric score and that's how it gets ordered, let me explicitly tell you the priority that I want to assign to that route, right?
Oh, yeah.
I'm okay with a world where there's an implicit default as long as I can explicitly override that. It. I can live in that happy medium, right?
Yeah.
I don't need my framework to ask me every question every time, right? But that was that. Just at the moment, I was like, I was looking around all these people, and I was like, oh, these aren't Python people. No one's freaking out. They should be freaking out. Someone stop them. They were all just calm as Hindu cows.
Yeah. Merge that pull request. Don't merge that.
Yeah. But yeah, that's cool. We're definitely gonna. I'm gonna try out. I'm gonna go try the language. I want to go see it.
Oh yeah, I mean it's super early days, like for sure.
Yeah,
and so you know,
I really want to get a feature into it.
Oh yeah, no, definitely, right? Yeah.
Can we put Easter eggs in? Will you accept Easter egg pull requests?
Oh, potentially. Okay. So the.
Aladdin references.
Yes.
So the name. A lot of folks ask me, like, how'd you come up with the name of the language? So the co-creator and myself are big fans of Settlers of Catan, the board game.
Right.
Right. And so, you know, there are five resources in Settlers of Catan, and obviously the most powerful is, you know, grain, obviously, right? Which, and if that's not obvious, there's a paper out there. Maybe I can find you a link and you can put that in the notes,
yeah,
too.
Yeah, send it over to us.
Right, yeah. And so, you know, if they're Settlers of Catan related Easter eggs, like, honestly, they could totally make it into the
quest. Awesome. Okay.
Yeah. Okay. Well, so, in Catan land, if I tell you I will trade you sheep for wheat, what do I have? I find myself having these debates with people. Like, I'll trade you sheep for wheat. What resource am I holding?
That
I
want to get?
Sheep. You're holding sheep.
Yes.
Is that seriously a problem for you?
No, me. Did you say wheat? No, I got three wheat. Yeah.
No, like I've played with people that hear that backwards. And it's the most frustrating. Like it changes the nature of the game because the whole game, they're saying it backwards and they're just like, I was like, yeah. And they're like, no, I need that.
And I'm just like, I always say, oh, yeah, I will give you one brick for your 3 weeks. Or right, whatever, yeah. Right? Like, I always freeze it. Yeah.
Explicit.
That's explicit.
Yeah, explicit, right? Yeah.
This is where my router gives me prioritize.
Oh, yeah.
Because everyone's got their own scoring algorithm.
That's
and they're
right.
Assigning different weights to the words.
The boat trading ratios always get everybody.
Yes.
The trading ratios on the end, was it 2-for-1 or was it 2-for-any?
Yeah.
No, that's so funny. I think I've played the game so many times that I've never considered that as
First time you introduce somebody to it, you're explaining it to them the entire game.
True. And every time I play, I sit down long enough from it that every time someone plays with me, they're teaching me again. We actually do have just the base game at home. It's been a while since we played, but we got pretty deep into it for about 6 months and then got distracted with some other board games. But
I mean, what I'd suggest, if you want to get distracted again and get back in Catan world, I think the most popular expansion is Seafarers, but you know,
yeah, that's the one that I've seen. Right.
But it's kind of whatever. Honestly, the expansion that you want is Cities and Knights. That expansion. So especially if you play a lot of Catan like I do, right? And you just want a game that's harder. You want a game that's more complex. That you know, because eventually after you're playing the base game for a while, you know, after people set up the board, you can kind of tell who's going to win if they play pretty optimally, right? But with Cities and Knights, you know, that doesn't actually happen. It's actually
a lot of different win conditions.
There's a ton of different win conditions.
Win conditions. Okay, I was
like,
that is some next level game mechanics.
So I got 3 wheat. I got 3 wheat for your sheep, but it's a high win, so. Yeah. You lose 1 wheat for every 3 days.
In the
a leaky bucket because of the wind. Yeah.
Oh yeah. Like definitely check that out. It makes the game far more interesting.
Cities and Knights.
All right. Yeah.
Got it. I'm gonna try it. I played Star Trek Catan. Mm-hmm. Who brought that to my house?
Probably Chad.
It was either Chad
that
or Blake. Blake's a big Catan fan. He also is a big fan of that railroad game that I have
Ticket
played
to Ride.
Yet. Ticket to Ride.
Yeah.
Is that a fun one?
Ticket to Ride's fun.
You played Ticket to Ride?
I've never heard of that.
Mm.
Yeah, me neither. We have to get Blake to bring it by.
Yeah, no, Ticket to Ride's fun. You're building railway lines between cities and trying to kind of get the longest train. And
it's just the longest road.
Well, yeah. Road was fun. Let's have a game of just that.
Yeah.
The longest road is the shortest path to victory. We all know that.
Yeah. Yeah.
He's going to make it happen. So, hiya. Go ahead.
We would have to play Catan on the podcast. If it didn't take 6 hours, we'd record it and then just play back the highlights of it.
Oh, yeah. I laugh
at each other.
I laugh every single time I look at the box and it says, oh, yeah, 45 minutes.
Yeah.
So I'm like,
I've never played a 45 minute game.
No. I that game I can get up to speed on pretty quickly, but man, like some of the games. I got Fantasy Flight games. Those are like kind of taking the concept of tabletop games and trying to put them in a board game to condense them. and I played the I've got the Battlestar Galactica one, and it's a 4 hour, like it's a 3.5 to 4 hour investment.
Oh yeah.
And it's a blast, but especially if you're playing with people that have never played before, which is pretty much all the time. Mm-hmm. Like, unless you just have a set group of guys. Like, yeah, we'll play. So
Rivals of Catan, we talked about it a little bit last night, condenses kind of the Settlers of Catan concepts into a two-player card game. Great for playing it at home against somebody. Yeah, it's great. Takes some of the mechanics, the resource gathering, takes some of the expansions, Cities and Knights expansions, and yeah, it's a good time. It's one of my favorite like two-player card games.
That sounds fun.
Yeah, I still haven't played it, which is super surprising for me. I definitely want to check it out.
Yeah. It's competitive too. Like you can get some pretty good games going. It's not at. I mean, it's obviously a card game, so it's randomness will win some games, but it
definitely sounds a lot easier for travel.
Yeah.
Than the Traders and Barbarians.
It does not have a 4 to 6 hour play time. It is more like a 45-minute time play.
Okay.
I hoped that there was actually going to be. I went gone to Strange a couple times, and there's a game night. There's like a they have everybody and for that conference they start a Slack channel. No, not a channel. This is
a Slack, an entire group.
Instance,
Slack community,
and everybody kind of communicates about the conference. And they've got game nights going on, and there's board game channels, and people bring their games from all over, like guys with like racks of games rolling into rooms like this,
coming through the airport.
Yeah. Oh, just and they're just like, "What game are you bringing?" And so they're like, everybody's like, "Oh, does anybody have this game?" And these people be like, "I've got one." And so it's just like. It's a nerd fest. It's amazing. But I learned a lot of games that I enjoy. Like, I learned about Codenames from a game at Strange Loop. And I was hoping there would be something kind of along those lines.
Here. Well, be the change you want to see in the
that's
world.
That's true.
Although it's too late to have brought all your board games with you.
Yeah. I should have submitted for a lightning talk and then just got up and be like, any of y'all got any games? who brought games?
Come see me after my talk.
We'll hang out after.
Any of you guys good at Codenames?
Am I good at Codenames?
Yeah. Any of you?
Pretty good.
Pretty good at Codenames?
Pretty good.
I've never played it.
Is this a game?
So I don't know.
It's a game, yeah, actually.
So no.
It depends on who. Yeah, it depends on if.
It's all about the team.
Yeah,
right? It's really all about the team. Yeah, no, I was playing a game of Codenames once, and I gave a very poor clue. For a particular set of words, and a fight broke out in the room around like what words I meant for this one, this clue.
Oh, yeah.
To the point where someone said, "I will bet you $10,000 right now that I'm correct on this," and I was like, "Oh, like, oh, like," and it was funny because I was like, "Oh, you're about to lose $10,000." Yeah. I was like, "Oh no!"
Oh, that's the worst is when you're just watching people so confidently blowing it. And you're just like, "There's nothing I can do," and they're just like, "I know it's this." One, but what about the others? It has to be that one. You're just like, no. The premise of the game is there's a whole bunch of words out, and you are trying to get your team to like pick the word without you saying it. But you do it in sets. Like you want to do it more than one card at a time. So you'll say a word that you can associate with several of your words, and you'll say like blue 3. And they have to determine what things in, like, there's the element of, like, what do I associate with blue? But there's also, like, what does he associate with blue?
Oh, you guys would never want to fucking play that game. Did you know I have the weirdest mental associations?
Sarah's really bad about that, too.
Like, yeah.
She's got some weird ones, and so I kind of have to, like,
if I experience something, if I, like, hear two bands in the same week, those bands are now linked together. And they have no musical connection whatsoever. It's just a temporal one that I've made in my brain. That is how I index my database.
Well, what's funny is you don't realize how many of those you have until you play that game.
Oh,
and
yeah.
You, like, this is a very simple association. And you realize, like, you've got so much context in your brain.
And you got to be thinking about everybody else, too, because there's usually one card on the board where if someone on your team guesses that word, your team immediately loses the game.
So you have to avoid that word.
You got Pee-wee's magic word.
Yeah.
And they're
You can't touch the magic word, and game is over, or round is over. It was the round, but
yeah.
Have you played the one with the pictures as well?
No, I didn't know that one.
So they have a Code Words Pictures edition, which have just
that's
really,
not words.
Really weird. It's really weird. They're very fun, but very weird pictures. Like just kind of like this amalgamation of different concepts. It's like abstract art. And so you do that one. It really is.
But then in your mind, you're storing your association.
Yeah, and so you're trying to pick something
to it.
So every photo, they're drawings, but every drawing has got like at least three kind of concepts in it. And so you're trying to figure out how to reference a concept in this photo or in this card, in this card, in this card. So trying to get it. And then they tell you can do this. We've done it once, and it's just a total dumpster fire for your brain. You mix the two. So you've got words and the photo, the picture ones, and it's carnage. Like you don't get anything done. Yeah.
It sounds all very
stressful.
it was fun.
No one would ever want to play that game with me. Like I don't even know how many challenge times that's come up on the podcast where I'm like, you know, not Mel Gibson, but the guy who was in Grandma's Boy, like. That kind of shit. That came up on the last episode. I think maybe, or not, if not in conversation. Well,
what's the link with Mel Gibson?
The dude, what's his name? I can't remember his name. That's part of my
Bubbles. Right.
But from the Happy Madison group, right?
Yeah.
From that Adam Sandler group, who's the lead character in Grandma's Boy, in my opinion, looks like kind of Mel, like a Mel Gibson.
Looks like Mel Gibson.
He looks like Mel Gibson.
And so that they are.
So he is. He is now like the association. The there is like if you take Mel Gibson, right, and then you put a modifier on it of Adam Sandler.
Extends.
Well, it's more of a mix in.
Okay.
So if you mix, or if you use composition, anyway, the point is, it returns that guy from Gremlins. Well, and that's how my brain works, and no one would ever want to play a fucking word association.
He's the slot that, if there's not a Mel Gibson, gets filled in there.
That's right. He's the implicit Mel Gibson.
And it's funny about your Strange Loop, you know, that general comp sci conference with board games versus the front end conference in Austin, Texas, with a endless bar at a speakeasy.
Speakeasy with bowling.
With bowling, three floors, and outdoor venue. Yeah.
Yeah. No, that was a very different. Of course, the pre party at Strange Loop, since it's in St. Louis, is at City Museum.
Which is a crazy place.
Yeah, it's basically a maze / obstacle course, but the whole it's a whole building.
But it's all sharp, rusty rebar.
It's really old Art Deco art.
Like it's not safe.
Yeah, no, it's not.
It's the tetanus home world.
Oh, it is a madhouse.
If tetanus were the final boss, this fortress.
So there's just a bunch of nerds drinking beer and like climbing through like weird fiberglass tunnels and it's
like eight floors too, and you go through a tunnel in one floor and you come out on a different floor of the building. It's actually for kids. It's a kid's
place. It sounds like like the Amazing Home or something.
Yes, but like not at all safe.
Or educational.
There's
nothing educational.
It's more art than anything. You don't have to look at pictures of City Museum.
Okay. Is it a museum?
No.
I guess as much as like an art museum.
As much as the aquarium we're going to tonight is.
It's very.
It's not an aquarium?
It's not an aquarium.
Wait, it's not an aquarium?
It's not an aquarium.
I was excited for fish.
Yeah.
It's just like a Chinese buffet with a big fish tank in the back. But, City Museum, we went, Paige and I went, this was before Henry was born, but we were in St. Louis and we wanted to go see it. It's like very meta art because it itself is the art piece, right?
Right. You're a part of the art once you're in it, right?
Yeah.
It was on like
a wrong tunnel. You're an installation piece. It's that simple.
When it's not like a pre-party for a tech conference, it's full of children.
Yep.
And at the front, we walked in and we're like, "Oh, this is insane!" Because I mean, it's like tubes made out of rebar, like, and they're small, like child sized, and there's like kids crawling. They're like three stories up in the air, just going through a big arc. That like it's like holy shit. kid falls out of that, it's not going to end well. And you can see it, and it goes up, and it comes on another floor, and it, like, an adult cannot fit through this space. So you can have, like, a three-year-old go through a tunnel and end up on a different floor of the building, and you cannot follow them through that tunnel. So the parents are all at the front, and it's chaos, kids everywhere, and there's just, like, three or four different families all simultaneously were kind of eavesdropping on all of it, where they're, like, sitting down with their kids, and they're, like, terrified, and they're like, listen to me. Right here. If you can't find me, you come here. And they're like running away. I'm like, come back. If you can't find me, this is the place. Like shouting at him, and the kids like disappear, and they're not even in the building anymore.
Oh,
they're
my.
They're just like, God, I hope they remember where the meetup point, where the rendezvous point was at the end of this. It's a cool spot. It's worth going as an adult. The other thing that's hard about it is hard on the knees. Yeah, so much of that shit is just like it's metal. It's like rebar cages that you crawl across.
That's what I was trying to fathom, like crawling through that.
You bring knee pads.
They sell them there,
a lot of people bring. A lot of people that were vets like came in and they looked like they were decked out to do roller derby, but they were just there to like climb the thing. We didn't bring any knee pads, and we didn't want to invest in knee pads. And it turns out, like, because little kids weren't wearing it, but like when your whole body weighs 20 pounds, and then you split that against four limbs. You know, getting like 5 pounds of metal into your kneecap, kids can just right
plus
through it. I get on it and start.
They have knee pads built in.
Yeah, it's very malleable. I get on it and like I put one knee down, and that's like 95 pounds of metal going into one knee. A knee that's kind of starting to wear out. And it's just like, oh, Jesus. But I'm like in a line and I'm getting pushed through. I was like so beat up by the end of it. This sucks. It was actually really cool, though. Yeah. I will bring knee pads if I ever go back.
There's a 10-story spiral slide that goes down as well. It's madness. So.
Is it kind of one of those kind that kind of stick to you when you go down?
Probably.
I would imagine there's a rusty nail sticking out somewhere down the middle.
It's like hard metal, much like this. Make
this,
a slide
this
out
metal
of it.
Table. Yeah, very much. When we were there afterward, I remember thinking like this: someone could die here.
Yes, this sounds
so
like someone.
So I looked it up when we got back to our Airbnb. And sure as shit, like within like 2 or 3 years, they had just settled a lawsuit over two kids that died. So children have died in the last decade.
I did not know that.
Oh, man. At this place, yeah.
So that's almost like a sacrifice for this thing now.
I don't know.
It's probably
really dark place. The spirits demanded it.
A horror movie waiting to happen now.
There's definitely some really deep artistic message that's being said about all that.
It's a place. Guys, I'm dealing with an IT guy. And you know how that is.
Preach.
Yeah.
That was my
team. We have... so you know. Well, let me rephrase. All right, kids. Ask your parents if they remember when hosting a website meant buying a computer. Alan's going to know the backstory on this. We have one client that we've worked with in any recent memory that did not let us host applications in the cloud, and instead they used, I shit you not, a local hosting company, those still exist, like in town, somewhat like a...
Look at your server plate if you need to.
Mm-hmm. Yep, you paid for it, you come watch it blink. And we haven't worked on this in like 18 months.
Oh, man, yeah.
The developer who originally did some of the deployments on that is not even with us at the company, although he's here in Austin.
He's here in Austin.
We should put him
in Slack.
So. Oh, hey.
Hayden,
if you're
listening, I tried to reach you.
A week ago, we were here. But that machine was imaged. I don't have the SSH keys for this thing. The server's down. Yeah. And then they're calling their IT guy, and he's like, I don't know, man. It's got Python on it. What even is that?
Call Python.
And I was like,
why you got snakes over there?
Right? Yeah, yeah. He's like, I don't know, there's Python code.
There was something that went wrong with it, and I think Tyrell was watching Tertiary Wise. I kind of explained it to somebody because I was grumbling, and he's like, so what's happening? And I was like, yeah, how do I explain this? Like, you know, because obviously...
you know, AWS is our platform
of choice
yeah. to deploy to. Mm-hmm. And so this had that unique requirement, this project. And I remember we did specify the box and everything. It was very bizarre because we thought, like, so what are our options for distros? CentOS? Oh, yeah, okay. I guess we can work with that.
It was not CentOS.
It was not vanilla CentOS.
It was the restricted, the security enhanced CentOS. Yes. Which is fine.
So we were in there.
It's just
like
you got to tell people
no
that.
Hands, yeah. That there was no, I couldn't do. I'm like, where is this folder? Like every Linux distro has, I forget what it was, like looking for
the Etsy directory. Yeah. It wasn't that bad. But it was something like that.
And then I finally had to look up, like, oh, you don't have that? Oh, you're using like the nerfed CentOS. But they had sent an email out to us about this error that they had gotten, and it had the guy that hosts this server for him in on it, and he's like, yeah, you need to get a hold of them, that's their app, that's their server. And I'm like,
it's sitting under your desk. Yeah.
Like, I can't. It's not here. The guy copied an email. It's like, go ask that guy. Like, he could walk down the hall and go.
He can restart it. Yeah.
Yeah. And so I'm troubleshooting it, though, looking at, like, wait, what happened? I get in there. I'm trying to restart our app, which is about all that we could do. Like, I can get in there and restart the process.
Yeah.
I get in there. I'm like, what? Wait, where'd it go? Where'd everything go? What? It was a disk failure. Yeah, that, like, I was like, okay, he literally has to go put a new hard drive.
It's their server. Yeah. They can email a new hard drive to him. So same guy.
Yes.
He's still around. 18 months later, he's still around. And I'm just trying to get into this machine.
Yeah.
Set it up, and he's like, just, you know, it still uses... It's all the same. Just use the keys you had before. And I was like, that employee's gone. That machine's been erased. This isn't an active customer.
I was going to say,
I don't know about you.
You're not even our client anymore.
Yeah. I don't keep like 30 years worth of SSH keys just fucking laying around. It's been destroyed.
Yeah.
And then, and this is a sysadmin.
Yeah.
It's just like, he's like, I don't know, man. That's the only key to the door. That's an AWS land or any sort of it's a virtualized environment. This is not a physical machine. It's a virtual machine.
They have
machine.
One blade that and they have it split up. They're doing like what AWS, Azure, all those guys are doing.
They're just doing it at 1/1000th of a percent of the scale. And
there may be an edge case that my data hoarding serves us yet again.
Oh, we don't have to actually debug this.
Okay.
What's fun about
probably have that.
I got to the point where I got him to open up a firewall rule from our Airbnb. I said, just, he has a root user. I know he does. He's acting like he's not going to let me in it. But he pasted some Python code and was like, maybe this is the problem because their app's not running. And he randomly pasted like 3 lines of the Django settings file. I was like, God damn it. Just, okay. That was when I gave up. I was like, okay, I'll fix it. Just stop looking at it. Stop emailing
me. Don't touch
this shit. Just let me in there. And now he's like, I can't get you in. I was like, you sent me source code, so you're on that machine. But he made me a user. He's going to now send me the root password for it. Okay. Mm. And the instructions I were given was, text me at this number, and I will give you the current root password. And then I haven't gotten around to it. And then like 10 minutes later, he emailed me again while we're doing this episode. And he said, Casey, when you've texted me, let me know via email so I can be sure that I got your text.
Mm. What now?
What? I think this is some sort of rudimentary. This is how they do 2-factor auth at this little hosting company.
Yeah.
And he's like, you text me, and then you email me and tell me that text I got
within 5 minutes of the text.
Yes. That will link your email to the text. And I think it's his way of doing 2-factor auth, and I'm going to fuck with him.
Yeah.
Because I'm going to text him a 6-digit code, and I'm going to email him a different 6-digit code. And when he emails back, and he's like, what's that? I'm going to be like, my bad, the it must have expired. You know when you copy the code and it's got 2 seconds left and you're like, oh, do I go as fast as I can or I just wait?
Yeah.
Or like, it's worse when it's got like 6 seconds left. It's
That's like coming up on a stoplight. Yeah. Like you don't have quite enough time. You're going to have to stop a little too abruptly.
And then you're like, I'll just wait. And then you're watching that little timer roll around and you're like, fuck, I had time.
You have to show up at that office to get your root password on a package on the front counter.
Dude, that's exactly like what it's funny that there's all this layers and layers of it's like the TSA. It's not actually secure, it's just security theater. And I'm pretty sure that operation over there you could socially engineer all the root passwords real easy. Mm-hmm. I'm pretty sure I could go up front to whoever works at the front desk of that base and say, excuse me, sir, I'm the HVAC man.
Yeah.
You know that room room that's got all the air vents and it's all blowy? I need access to that.
Yes.
And they'd be like, yes, sir. Yes, sir. I said, y'all making America great in here? And he'd say, God damn it, yes, we are. Let me get you into the blowy room.
Big cold in there.
Bro. Yeah, it's so hot. It's big cold. Yeah, y'all need to turn it down. We're from Arkansas, Oscar. I don't know if you picked up on that one.
Yeah, yeah,
right?
I did, yeah.
This is how hosting companies actually operate.
That is wild.
Yeah. Oh, man. Well, what's the plan for tonight? There's an aquarium that's not an aquarium. Yeah, I gathered that much.
I feel like we might be the fish then.
Honestly. We'll be swimming in something.
It will not be alcohol for me.
I'll just be
enjoying the coronavirus myself.
Oh yeah, no, especially with like how many folks that like I've met and have touched me. I'm like, oh, I've definitely.
So last night at the bar, the bartender, who was really awesome, by the way, but she was making an old fashioned for me, and she got her orange out, and then she couldn't find the peeler, so she went in the back and she got a peeler because she was going to do like a little orange peel garnish in it. She gets back, she goes to peel the orange, and she realizes that she's already peeled this orange completely. So instead, she decides that she's just going to squeeze orange into it. And so, I shit you not, and I'm not a germaphobe, I'm really not. So it didn't bother me in that way. But with all the coronavirus stuff, it was on my mind. She opens up like a thing of Angostura bitters and just bare hand... like 4 or 5 drops of bitters in her hand, and then takes that orange and then with both hands just massages this orange peel, or not the peel, it's the orange itself, you know, like the outside of it, with both hands just bare with bitters, and then just takes it one-handed over my drink and like orange up, orange facing the sky, squeezes it, and the orange juice just like comes through her fingers and into the cup, and she hands it to me, and I was just like, that's how you get coronavirus.
Wow.
Yeah. I was like, don't let the health department see you doing that shit. I'm pretty sure that's not okay.
Also, is that really a replacement for...
No.
For expressed orange peel?
She could have just been like... She could have just held up the orange and like, sorry, bro, I'm out of orange peel.
Yeah.
And I'd have been like, that's fine. Can I get 2 blueberries?
those bowling balls we were playing with last night, I'm pretty sure that they had things worse than coronavirus. They still had Spanish influenza.
Yeah, that's true.
Nasty. Those things have not been cleaned ever.
Yeah, that's true. That was fun though.
Yeah.
You know, I don't know much about the coronaviruses, viri. Viruses.
I can shit up now.
But I'm choosing to believe that they denature in alcohol. That's where I'm at.
I'm on board with that.
Yeah,
totally. I'll have an extra drink tonight.
Yeah, have 2.
Yeah,
be safe. You know,
yeah. Honestly, actually, speaking about last night, I had one guy who was a real hero last night. I was walking by and I'm enjoying my drink, and this guy's like, "Oh, I enjoyed your talk. Like, oh, like stand in line with us or whatever." And I'm like, I just skipped 75% of this long line. I feel horrible for that, but I'm chatting with the dude or whatever.
No, man, you're VIP.
You know, it feels that way, right? And so I make it up to the front, to the bar, and I'm like, let me get a gin and tonic. And he's like, oh, make that too. And I'm like, oh, please make that too. And she's like, all right. And then I grab, she like puts them out, and the dude's like, ah, no, those are both for you. And I was like, no. And I was like, oh.
Okay.
I was like,
what a move.
What a crazy move.
He wasn't even buying it for you.
No, he wasn't even buying it.
Because that would be a way more fun move. It's like, make it too, and it's like, oh, I got you, and they're all, yeah. But it's just like, the conference is paying.
Yeah.
Get him seven.
Yeah.
That's funny.
Yeah.
That was a good time.
It was, yeah. It was interesting to walk up there, and I was like, give me two IPAs. I got three left. You want those. And I was like,
yes. Yeah. That's why you came back.
Again, good looking out.
You were three-fisting beers when you came back.
At the bartender's advice.
That was good. That was in my top three conference parties for sure.
Oh, awesome.
Yeah, that was fun.
Yeah, have to see if it's top tonight. Evan, you will be doing rap at the karaoke tonight.
Oh, man.
Oh, yeah.
Like just for everyone?
Oh, yeah.
I mean, is it like private room karaoke?
No, it should be a big public one.
You wanna do our duet tonight?
Oh, honestly, sure, why not? Yeah, I'm down.
Casey's drinking again.
Oh, I'm gonna have to get me some Aladdin drinks tonight.
But yeah, no, Evan Yu is a fantastic rapper. Like he can probably go toe to toe with Eminem, no joke.
I cannot wait.
Oh yeah.
Like, well, that's cool because M's a big fan of the show.
Yeah.
So you just started a huge fucking battle.
Well, why don't we get them both on the show?
That's good.
Yeah.
I'm down for that. I'll work on Eminem.
All right.
You work on getting Evan on the show.
All right.
And we'll see which is more attainable.
All right.
Cool. All right, guys. Well, it's time for me to go drink another gallon of water and get ready to be a fish tank. Hang on a second. It's fish tank karaoke? What's happening? Is the aquarium and the karaoke the same thing?
Yes. Well, I really ought to read the guide. I think we're the fish that, you know, that people are going to watch.
Got it. Yeah. So you get in the fish tank and sing songs.
Interesting.
Sing Aladdin songs.
Yes. Man. Yeah.
Okay, I'm in.
I think. I just made that up, but it seems plausible.
All right. Well, thanks for hanging with us, Oscar, man.
Yeah, of course. It was awesome. Had a great time.
Yeah, man. We'll have you back on whenever you want.
Yeah, thank you.
Come visit us in Arkansas.
Sure.
We'll show you our server closet.
Yeah, I was going to say, like, I'm just not even a server closet.
Cool. All right, everybody. We'll see you in a week.
Thanks for listening to Friday Afternoon Deploy, recorded and produced by the team at Lofty Labs. If you enjoyed the show, you can subscribe to future episodes via iTunes, Apple Podcasts, Google Play, and Spotify. You can also follow at Friday Deploy on Facebook and Twitter for episode previews, live streams, and other behind-the-scenes peeks. Past episodes and show notes on this episode can be found at friday.hirelofty.com. That's friday.hirelofty.com. If you'd like to contact the show, or if you're local to the Northwest Arkansas area and would like to be a guest on the show, you can email us at podcast@hirelofty.com.